Blog Talk Radio.
From Dog Works Training Centers, professional canine training center in Denver, Colorado, this is the Dog Doctor. Committed to families and their dogs to build lifelong and fulfilling relationships. Visit our website at dogdoctorradio.com. The Dog Doctor is part of Twine Group Media and syndicated worldwide on blogtalkradio.com. Now here is your host, Dr. Robert Forto, the Dog Doctor.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto coming to you live from Denver Dog Works. I'm here with my co-host and business partner, Michelle. How are you?
I am great, and I'm looking forward to the new changes occurring with Denver Dog Works here in Denver, Colorado.
We're going to get to that in just a second. Before we do, we want to update you guys on some upcoming events at Denver Dog Works.
Right. The first weekend of May, we will be participating in the Furry Scurry. And otherwise, upcoming events, Canine Good Citizen class, which is an open type of a enrollment class at Denver Dog Works, has moved to Saturdays at 3 o'clock. So if that time frame works better for you, give me a call, 303-752-2818. I'd be happy to get you signed up for that class.
On the third weekend of April, we're having our Canine Aggression Seminar. There are still a couple of openings for that, so if you're interested in that, give us a call. As Michelle just said, 303-752-2818. So, Michelle, what's going on with our Camp Works dogs? I know we have a couple in training right now, and we're still working with Charlie a little bit. He's our little boxer puppy from New York State, and we took him swimming the other day, and he did not like it.
No, he did not like it at all. The Canine Fitness Center is a fabulous place. The ladies there were all very friendly and knowledgeable and helpful. They put a life jacket on your dog. They make sure he's had his vaccinations. They take him in the back, and they try to get him to jump in the pool right away. Couple of problems, though, is at this time of year, the water in the pools are not heated whatsoever. So the water was very cold, and I think that had a little bit to do with it. We did take Charlie two times, and he just did not care for the water at all. Once he's in the water, he swims beautifully, just fine, can get out of the water just fine. He just did not find it fun at all.
So how much does it cost to teach a dog how to swim at the Canine Fun and Fitness Center?
A private session is $18, and your dog, if they're not spayed or neutered and they're 6 months or older, you will be required and only allowed to do private sessions at $18 for 20 minutes. If your dog is neutered or spayed and able to be around other dogs after a temperament evaluation, then they can do a group situation, and that's $8.50 for the 20 minutes.
Do they do it by appointment, or is it just kind of an open swim?
They do it by appointment, although on Sundays they do have some Sundays where they offer an open free session. We did not get to participate in that free session, but it's for a couple of hours, and it's done with an outside trainer. And it's only offered sporadically throughout the year. They don't advertise for it. You just kind of are there, and you find out about it.
Do they do anything like dock diving at that place?
Not that I'm aware of. They're really not diving off of the dock here. They're just really just kind of jumping in off the side of the pool like we were allowed to do when we were kids.
How big is the pool?
Typical lap-sized pool that you would see in most people's backyards nowadays. They're an inflatable-style pool. They're about 4.5 feet deep, about 6 feet wide by about 10 feet long.
And it's $18.50 per session?
It's $18 for a private session and $8.50 for a group situation.
Sounds like a good deal. I know a lot of people want to teach their dogs how to swim, so when they do take them out on their boats and take them to the mountains to camp and things like that, they want to make sure they know their dog knows what to do in case they want to get in the water too.
Right, and you know, a lot of people think, well, what in the world would you want to go teach a dog to swim for? Basically, there are some breeds out there that just can't swim. Boxers, for instance, are deep-chested, and it is difficult for them to stay afloat and be able to maneuver around. So putting a life jacket on a dog is always the safest thing for your dog. Even in a boating situation, the water can become rough. The shore could be farther away than your dog can handle swimming. But for the most part, most dogs can swim. They just don't necessarily enjoy it.
So there you go. So if you're interested in teaching your dog how to swim and you are in the Denver area, right down the road from us on Leedsdale is Canine Fun and Fitness Center. And I'm sure you can find them on Google. Just type in Canine Fun and Fitness Center on the web and it should pull it up. They are very nice folks. So we're going to get into a couple of other news and notes before we get into the gist of our show today. I want to mention an article that I wrote that I found in Dog Fancy magazine just this past week, and it's about the AKC's top 10 dogs for the year. And I want to read them down, and I want Michelle and I to talk a little bit about them as we go. The first one, for the 19th straight year, is the Labrador Retriever, followed by the German Shepherd, the Yorkshire Terrier, the Golden Retriever, the Beagle, the Boxer, as we were talking about with our buddy Charlie, the Bulldog, the Dachshund, the Poodle, and the Shih Tzu. So, Michelle, I know you do quite a bit of our group classes and our private lessons. How does that list there coincide with the clients that are coming into Denver Dog Works?
Well, I would change the position of the Boxer to 3, where the Yorkshire Terrier is, putting it Lab, German Shepherd, Boxer, Golden Retriever. Those are the dogs I see generally the most of, as well as a lot of mixed breeds, including your designer breeds like the Labradoodles and the Golden Doodles. I've seen at the daycares a lot of Beagles lately, not necessarily Bulldogs, but this doesn't say if they're English Bulldogs or American Bulldogs. There are a few of those that we see. I have seen 6 Dachshunds at the vet this past week alone, varying from puppies to older dogs. Shih Tzus, not so much in this area. Being in Colorado, we have a lot of people that are active with active lifestyles and active dogs, so it doesn't surprise me that we see a lot of Boxers in this area.
So it is surprising that the German Shepherd has now moved up into second place. That place was held for a real long time by the Golden Retriever. But now that the German Shepherd is up there, we are seeing an influx in other types of jobs that dogs can do, and they are becoming much more popular as people do more things with their dogs.
You know, and absolutely. And a lot of people, if they're seriously looking at an AKC registered breed, they're looking more and more into the quality of the dog for the job that it was bred to do versus the looks.
That's exactly right. And, of course, depending on where the dog ranks, you also have the potential for genetic problems because these rankings are in terms of numbers of registrations. So, by far, the Labrador has the most registrations of any of the 163 breeds recognized by the American Kennel Club, and therefore you receive a lot of medical issues too, such as hip dysplasia, other types of genetic issues. I'm drawing a blank here right now. What are some of the more common ones for labs?
Well, I have 2 that are in Camp Works right now. They're both 10 months old. One is a black lab, one is a yellow lab, one is a female, and one is a male. And, you know, quite honestly, there's a few different issues. I've trained about 3 black labs in the last 6 months, 2 of which have ophthalmologist problems, ocular problems with their eyes, where their eyes are protruding a little bit. The labs that I've been training, chocolate labs, are rarer. But a lot of them are overweight as puppies, not growing in a progressive sort of way. I just spoke with one of my chocolate lab owners yesterday, and I said, you know, he's coming up on a year. He's still very short. He's at my knee height, and I'm not a very tall person. My inseam of my legs is 23 inches, and this dog is coming up to my knees at a year of age. He should be a little bit taller than that for a lab. And she said the vet already told her that that's about all he's going to be. He's going to stay shorter, and they're not sure why. Well, they are sure why. They just don't like to tell the client that it's a genetic defect, and they will start seeing more and more of these issues happening.
So if you're interested in finding out more about the top 10 list, go to our blog on denverdogworks.com. The next topic I want to talk about is also just a quick blurb in the Dog Fancy, and it caught my eye because I see this a lot, homeless people and their pets. We have a big problem with homeless people here in Denver, and you often see people that have dogs and other pets as well.
They're not just homeless here in Colorado. In Denver especially, we have a larger problem with panhandling than we do with homeless people. The panhandlers are standing out there, you know, after work hours, on the weekends. You can tell that they are clothed enough that they have a job somewhere else. It might not be the best job, and they're doing this to supplement their incomes. And then they'll bring out their children and their dogs and beg for you to give them money.
But what caught my eye with this article is the University of California at Davis Veterinary School, one of the most renowned vet schools in the country, offers a free clinic to homeless people's pets. And I thought that was kind of cool that a lot of people are down on their luck in this bad economy or recession. And a lot of times the pet care is one of the first things to be removed from the family budget. So I think this is an excellent idea that UC Davis is doing, and anything to help the animals, whether it's just a nail trim or an ear cleaning or a flea and tick bath or whatever, they're doing a good job with this nonprofit.
Yeah, that's a wonderful thing to do. I knew UC Davis does a lot of nonprofit type of charity work in the community there for all sorts of different veterinary situations.
So if you are homeless, don't give up on your pet. There are places out there that can help you. I know here in Denver there is a location. We used to have a trainer that worked with us, and she used to talk about one of the veterinary clinics that would offer free or low-cost veterinary care.
Yeah, and I do think that some of the shelters in and around Denver are starting to offer, like Health Fair 9 for adults, and children does it for people, but they're starting to offer pet care days where you can come in and get a discount or a voucher for your pet care.
So if you're interested in finding out more about that, check out this month's issue of Dog Fancy. The next one really caught my eye, and I know one of our trainers, James Myers, even posted something about this on Facebook. It is about cloned search and rescue dogs. There is a gentleman, I believe he's a former police officer, that has taken his dog Tracker and has cloned a group of five search and rescue dogs all off of the DNA from his main dog Tracker.
Well, you know, I know that cloning is very controversial, and we've even kind of thrown it around and discussed it for our dog Aneke, and I am at least against it, because when you clone that dog, you're cloning that dog for the quality of the dog as an adult. And when you have a puppy that's whelped, the puppy's life and way that it behaves is shaped by certain circumstances from the outside world as well as while he's in the womb. So you might not necessarily get an exact clone of Tracker that you are hoping to get.
Well, it says here in the article that Tracker just recently passed away at 16 years old. So he had a long life with the search and rescue work that he did. And according to the article, it says that there were 321 natural disasters, and it took 200,000 lives worldwide, all of those natural disasters. So we do need more search and rescue type dogs. And that is a very extensive training process. It takes an exceptional breed of dog and tremendous amount of time and resources to train a search and rescue team.
Right. You had a search and rescue training facility when you were in Portland, isn't that right?
Yes, but we trained people. They had their own dogs, and we trained them. So we didn't provide dogs to the volunteers that did the search and rescue work.
No, but training the team itself, there's a lot of labor-intensive hours, and your dog might not ever get to do the job. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. I remember we used to have a colleague here in Denver that was down in Douglas County, and she trained border collies for search and rescue work, and they trained for years and were never called to a disaster.
Right, and I remember that as well. Her dog was about 8 years old, and she was concerned that he would never get to see a disaster. But, you know, quite honestly, I hope that my dog would never get to see a disaster. You know, you want to train for it, but you never want it to happen.
I agree, but as we all know with all of the working dogs, they thrive on that type of work, whether it's practice or the real thing. Obviously, they don't know that they're finding the dead body in the rubble, or they're finding the marijuana in the school locker. They're doing their job, and then they get a reward of some type. Typically, it's a ball or a treat or just a lot of praise.
Right, and I remember we watched a documentary on, I believe his name was Kyle Warren, and he does the search and rescue training with his German Shepherds. An extraordinary video, actually, depicting how they actually do go out and they get to be part of the search and rescue team, but they're only set out in a certain area, and their dog, he and his dog, did not find the missing person that had unfortunately succumbed to a rafting mishap. But they did hit on an area, and it was found that they did find the gentleman's shoe. So I think that that's extraordinary. They were on the track. They were just sent into the wrong area.
That's exactly right. So we're going to take a break here. You're listening to the Dog Doctor Radio Show, part of the Twine Group Media Network. And when we come back, Michelle is going to talk about the eval process at Denver Dog Works. We'll be right back.
Team Aneke is a professional Siberian Husky racing team located in Denver, Colorado and Duluth, Minnesota. Dr. Robert Forto and his team are training for their first Iditarod run in 2013. Team Aneke is seeking corporate and individual sponsors. For more information, visit our website at teamaneke.com. That's TEAMINEKA.com. Let's get back to the show. Must you Huskies? Gee-ha!
Back. You're listening to the Dog Doctor Radio Show, brought to you by Denver Dog Works and part of Twine Group Media. My name is Robert Forto, and I'm here with my co-host, Michelle. Michelle, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing well. I'm really looking forward to this spring weather here in Colorado. It means that a lot more people are contacting us about agility classes and scootering with their dogs. And I just want to remind everybody, we only do those classes when we have a solid 10 people that sign up for that.
That's exactly right. Before we get into any of those sports that we always do in the summertime, one of our most popular programs is our Camp Works program. And just to let everybody know, we are launching a brand new locations type service on our website. We're going to work with the locations that Pet Airways uses all throughout the country and be able to pick up dogs at our Denver location and work with your dog in our Camp Works program. And before too long, we're also going to offer a transportation service, at least here in the Colorado regional area, where we will pick up and drop off your dog for our Camp Works program. But one of the most important aspects of any of our dog training programs is our evaluation process. And Michelle is our chief evaluation officer, I guess. I guess that would be a CEO.
Okay.
So Michelle,
if you want to say that.
Michelle is our CEO of evaluations, and she takes great pride in what she does to make sure all of our dogs that come into training and their clients or their owners receive the appropriate training program for their dog. A lot of people come in and they say they want one training program over another, whether it be private lessons or Camp Works or group class or CGC or whatever. And often, most of the time, that particular choice is motivated by one thing, and that is time. And then secondary is most likely money. So for a person that doesn't have the time to do 8 weeks of lessons or come to group class on 4 o'clock on Saturdays, they expect to have a program that fits their schedule. So one of the things that we do is do this evaluation, and Michelle is going to describe that process a little bit in detail.
Well, the evaluation at Denver Dog Works, for the most part, is set up because a lot of our clients will either call us or send us an inquiry email saying, hey, my dog needs trained, I want lessons. And we don't list our prices online for our lessons, but we did start listing the prices and a detailed description of my Camp Works program about 6 months ago online, and that program has actually taken off and is almost all that I'm doing now. And I find it very enjoyable. It takes a lot of pressure off of the client. It takes a lot of pressure off of the dog because now something is being done with them every day versus a person that works 8-10 hours a day plus drive time doesn't have the quality of time to give to their dog, let alone the quantity of time that it takes to do training, especially with young dogs or dogs that have some behavior problems. If you've rescued a dog recently, your dog might know sitting down, but he might be terrible with manners and greeting people. Your Camp Works program, even though it's highly described in detail on our website, does not necessarily mean that that's what your dog is going to get. It might mean that your dog is going to simply come in and only learn manners, and it will be determined during our evaluation process. And that is why it is so important that you do make the time to come in and sit with me so that we can develop a program and I can design you a package that works for all situations, your lifestyle, and your dog that you have now welcomed into your home. A lot of times I will have people say, yeah, I want that. Yeah, I want that. I want that. And it's not necessarily anything that their dog can do, let alone what their dog needs to start with. Teaching a simple sit is a first and foremost command that is taught in all of our classes. Just today I had somebody come in that asked me for an evaluation that I met during a service dog class at the Greenwood Athletic Club, of all places, and she called me up and she asked me to do an evaluation on her therapy dog. As I'm sitting there speaking with her during our evaluation, I discovered, to my surprise, that where she has her dog doing therapy, there is no requirement for canine good citizen training. There really isn't any guideline for the training. She walks her dog on the right side. He stands when she does a meet and greet. There's just some lax type of behaviors going on in her training style for a therapy dog that I was a little bit surprised with. Her dog has developed a slight aggression. He growls when dogs get in his face. So we've decided that we're going to work with her doing some behavior modification, but a lot more obedience foundation work utilizing Canine Good Citizen. And I would not be able to determine that for her if I had just talked with her over the phone or if I had been emailing her back and forth. So our evaluation process is very important because we get to observe your dog in a new situation as well as listen to what you have to say face-to-face versus, emails and things can get confused.
So I know we do out-of-state training. So how does that process work for somebody that is in?
Well, in Charlie's situation, Charlie did not get an evaluation because his owners contacted me from New York via an email. I called them. You know, people keep their cell phones. I thought they were right here in Denver. And she said, no, I'm in New York. I'm going to fly my dog to you. Your program is awesome. I've researched you. I've researched your website. I've read all of Dr. Forto's blogs. She had done her homework about us and was completely satisfied that we would be able to take her 12-week-old puppy and train him up through the age of 6 months. Charlie goes home in 3 short weeks. I have taken him through a lot of different types of changes, and although his training is good and he has a very good foundation, he still has his bad days, doesn't he, Robert?
Yes, he does, sometimes. So the next question I have is a lot of people, there's more of a controversy rather than a process about charging for evaluations.
Right, and right now I'm kind of bouncing back and forth with that. I charge for my evaluation if I go to your home, and I charge you $100 because I'm taking the time to come and see you and build you a package. And I wrestle with charging you to come and see me when at the same time I'm still taking my time that is, giving you 20 years of knowledge about dog training and observations and behavior and still designing you a training package that is specific for you and your dog. It's not like signing up for dog training at a big box store where you're just going to come in and be told what to do and leave. This is very tailored to what you are going to need with your dog. And so we're wrestling back and forth about what we should charge for in-office evaluations. And honestly, I think my time is worth something.
That's exactly right. I mean, if you go to any professional type service, you're typically going to pay for that. And I think a lot of people, me included, when they're paying for something, they expect something different.
Well, they expect something different, but at the same time, they have an understanding that what you're giving them is valuable at that moment. It's not just, oh, hi, I'm sitting on the train next to you, and, oh, you're a dog trainer? Hey, I'm having a problem with my dog. You know, anytime you've been on a train or an airplane or in a public situation and you find out the guy next to you is a doctor, you're not going to ask him about the weird thing on your toe.
That's exactly right. So when a dog goes home, training isn't over, is it?
No, absolutely not. Training is not over. I'm providing your dog with a foundation.
Let me clarify that just a bit. When they go home on a board and train or a what we call a Camp Works program.
Right. The training is not over. I'm giving your dog a foundation. I'm giving them the tools that they will need for you to now become their pack leader and continue being that pack leader in their life for the rest of their lives. Having a relationship with your dog doesn't happen if you're not willing to be their pack leader, and that means that you provide everything for them. Just like Caesar says on his show, it's very true. You're providing them with all of their basic needs.
You know, something I tell people all the time in my classes, dogs need leaders. Either they're going to lead or be led, one or the other. Either you're going to lead or be led, one or the other. And when that occurs in dogs, they will find a way to take that top spot, and they're comfortable in either spot, either as a leader or as a follower.
Yes, very few dogs will remain in that follow position, especially young dogs. And I'm talking about dogs between 4 months and 2 years of age. They are constantly testing the waters, constantly seeing if you're going to be watching what they're doing. And like our daughter calls it, it's a game of chutes and ladders. You know, you're climbing the ladder, and you're going to stay on top. And if you're not, your dog's going to push you down that chute.
That's exactly right. And we are not talking about dominance-based training.
No, absolutely not.
A lot of that is often intermingled together, whereas you have to do alpha roles and takedowns and all this stuff. Proper leadership is proper balance. And you have to have a dog and a dog-human relationship that is properly balanced. The same goes with your human relationships. If you have a person that is over-controlling or overly submissive, typically you will have an unbalanced relationship.
Absolutely. And I just want to clarify, in our Camp Works program, my main goal is to teach your dog manners and balanced leadership roles. That means that any human being that they come in contact with, they should view as an automatic leader. And I do this by simply doing that simple sit that I'm talking about. We teach them, one of the first things we teach them is to sit politely for petting. I don't care if it's a lap dog or if it's a boxer. Your dog's going to sit politely for petting, whether I'm going to pick him up or I'm going to lean down and pet him on the head. And that's the number one complaint that we have is, oh, my gosh, my dog jumps on people as soon as they walk in the door. Leash train your dog. Teach your dog manners inside your home as well as outside your home. It's amazing to me, Robert, how people think that they should only put a leash on their dog when they go outside.
That's exactly right. And one of my crutch commands is a dog is only as good as his stay. So if a dog cannot stay in all distractions, therefore he cannot be trusted in public or in the home. And we discuss all of these things in our evaluation. And when we do so, you're going to leave learning something. That's one of the things that I like to instill in my clients is every single session, you are going to learn something before I leave. And before I leave, I always ask, Mr. or Mrs. Johnson, did you learn something today? What are you struggling with? What are you learning? And I don't leave until that is accomplished. And a lot of trainers don't do that. The proverbial alarm goes off on their watch, and they're out of there.
Yeah, we don't set alarms on our watches. You know, that's another thing, too, is we're very flexible in our timetable with our private classes, for instance. But, you know, I want to get back into what you just said. None of my clients leave until they've learned, and that's another reason why I wrestle with charging for the evaluation. I'm going to give you some tip. I'm going to give you some type of advice. I'm going to change your dog's life in the moment that I am with them, whether you see that or not. That is a value that I think should be compensated for.
That's exactly right. And you can contact us at Denver Dog Works through our website at denverdogworks.com or through our toll-free number that our people that are listening throughout the country is 888-317-3553. 888-317-3553.
Can they give comments on our website on this show?
They can't on our website, but they can do it on Facebook, of course, on our discussions tab. And remember, if you're interested in joining that discussion, there is a button right there at the top of the website, and you can just come on in, and everybody and their grandmother has a Facebook account now. So if you don't, sign up for Facebook and become a fan of Denver Dog Works.
Right, and I was just going to mention, I would like to get some feedback from our listeners. And I'm going to post it out there on Facebook as well. What do you think an evaluation is worth? What would you be willing to pay to have your dog evaluated and have a package designed just for you?
So there you go. So you're listening to the Dog Doctor Radio Show. We will be back next Saturday at 9:30 a.m., our normal spot. And if you have any questions or comments, make sure you hit that contact button on our website, and it will get right to us. All of our emails go to our cell phones and everything else all at once. So we're always willing and able to help you out. My name is Robert Forto. Never forget your dreams. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.